You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In just 1 week from now, we won't have this crazy election to kick around anymore. There are a lot of close races. There's a lot of money being spent. And, of course, lots of weird behavior on the campaign trail. New York Times op-ed columnist Gail Collins joins us now, as she has every Tuesday during this election cycle, for the latest edition of How Did Politics in America Get So Weird? This month, Little Brown is releasing her book, When Everything Changed, The Amazing Journey of American Women from 1960 to the Present, in a paperback edition. And it's always a pleasure to talk to Gail Collins. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
The big story this week has been Virginia Thomas reaching out across the airwaves to leave a voicemail on Anita Hill's university phone, asking her to consider apologizing. It's opened a big can of worms, but is that a political story?
Well, sure. I mean, in the sense that it's very, very weird to have the wife, the spouse of a Supreme Court justice behaving in the political ways that she's been behaving over the past. She's very, very out front in right-wing causes, which suggests conflicts of interest we can't even know about. We don't know really who's paying for her organization, who her big donors are, where she's getting her own salary. So that's all huge. But then the part about suddenly leaving this message or in the early morning to Anita Hill asking her when she's going to apologize is so over the top. If it was somebody like me, I'd say, well, obviously you were partying too long the night before, but I presume that she's a more moderate human being than.
Well, the call has gotten the story back in the news, and you'd think that it's not something that Ginny Thomas or Justice Thomas would want back in the news.
No, it's very strange to me that after all this time, they clearly are still feeling that they've been abused in this, even though, excuse me, he's on the Supreme Court. He was accused by this woman who was teaching at Brandeis, and he's on the Supreme Court. So the idea that he's the one who feels that he's been injured in this is fascinating.
There's been a lot of talk about candidates' sex lives during this campaign season. Is anything fair game?
Well, in some places it seems to be, although it's not working. You know, the most famous low-blow ad that we've had this year, I think, is the one in Kentucky, in which the Democratic Senate candidate recalled incidences from his opponent's college years in which he belonged to a fraternity that made fun of religion, and there was something with a woman who they went off and made her, I think, pretend to worship an idol in a creek somewhere. It sounds like the kind of thing that many, many, many people did in their college years, but he treated it in a very serious manner. And then his opponent, Rand Paul, responded in a very serious manner by claiming that his religion was being defamed and so on and so forth. It got very messy and very ugly. And the guy who did the ad, the Democrat, is really suffering from it. His polls are just plummeting.
It hasn't hurt David Vitter, has it?
No. And for some reason, well, you know, it is Louisiana. Maybe that's part of it. But people had already digested the fact that David Vitter had made use of prostitutes, Senator Vitter, even though he's a huge family values kind of guy. But it had happened a while ago. Everybody knew about it. And it's always been my own personal opinion, after having spent more time than is good for me looking into sex scandals in politics, that people really don't care. They want to know what their person is doing to support the family values that they have, but they don't really care much what they're doing with their private life, and they'll just bleep it out.
Well, it did
hurt. If they think the guy is going to do the stuff that they want.
Well, it did hurt Elliot Spitzer. I suspect that it's also a matter of timing. If you find out that a candidate has had a love child or has been going to prostitutes a couple of weeks before the election, it'll hurt a lot more than if we find out about it 2 months before.
Yeah, and I've got to tell you, looking in retrospect, and the problem with Elliot Spitzer was there was a legal issue and he had to resign. If that hadn't been the case and he had been able to, you know, sort of soldier on and make his way through it, it's very possible that he would have come out okay. New York in particular is deeply unconcerned about these kinds of matters.
Have you seen the ads that Linda McMahon has been running, the Republican candidate running against Richard Blumenthal for the Senate, for the seat that was vacated by Chris Dodd in Connecticut? The ad that I just saw the other day is all about how she feels the pain of poor women.
Yeah, there's a lot of pain going on in her life. She runs professional wrestling. She's got a terrible gender gap, huge, humongous gap. The women just are not supporting her candidacy at all, and that's mainly because women tend in general to support the Democrat. But I think it's also that women just are turned off by the whole professional wrestling thing. It's a very, very guy kind of activity.
Well, it is interesting that so many of the conservatives, the most macho candidates, are women. The women that Sarah Palin has called the Mama Grizzlies. Was this? Do you think this was part of some kind of political strategy this
year? A plot? No, I don't. I think it's very natural. I mean, whenever throughout our history, whenever there's been a new thing, whether it's radio or TV or aeronautics or whatever, and it's disorganized and new, women tend to do really well and move up very quickly and take very important positions. When things get very organized and ossified and 10,000 layers of people who each have their own little special privilege niche, then it's very, very hard for new people to break in. And you're basically describing the difference between the Tea Party movement in particular, which is very open and disorganized, and the Democratic Party, which is completely non-disorganized and very, very, very structured. And so it's not surprising, unless you presume that all women are liberal Democrats, it's not surprising to me at all that women have risen to the top very quickly in some of these states when it comes to the Tea Party movement.
And some of them are still serious contenders, even if there have been problems that they face. Sharon Angle, Linda McMahon, Carly Fiorina, Meg Whitman. We haven't heard much about Jan Brewer since she made her headless bodies claims.
But she's probably going to win. I think she's very far ahead there. But
the others all have a good chance, don't they?
No, most of them actually I think are going to lose. But except Sharon Angle may well win in Nevada. And that'll be really interesting to see what happens with her. I mean, you'd sort of almost love to see the Republicans have a 51-vote margin and see them try to put together some kind of a group out of the people they would get under those circumstances.
Well, Christine O'Donnell, who's running for the Senate in Delaware, said that she faces discrimination as a conservative woman. When she was asked recently to name a senator across the aisle that she would work with if she were elected, here's a clip of what she said.
Give me a name, Christine, of someone in the U.S. Senate across the aisle that you're comfortable working with.
Well, she's not a senator anymore, but I would definitely have to say Hillary Clinton. I use her name a lot on the campaign trail because she is someone that I admire. She is a woman who's had to hold her own in a man's world, and I think she's doing an amazing job right now. So Hillary Clinton is someone that I look forward to working with. As a member of the Foreign Relations Committee in the U.S. Senate, I will have direct conversations with her about where we should be taking our foreign policy, and I look forward to that.
Does she know that she'll be appointed to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee?
No, neither does the Foreign Relations Committee, I think. But Hillary, that's exactly almost the same thing that Sarah Palin did when she was running as vice president. She sort of glommed on to Hillary Clinton as the person she was like and, you know, with whom she had an affinity, much, I think, to Hillary Clinton's shock and dismay. But
what about to the Tea Party supporters of these candidates?
Well, you know, isn't it interesting how much Hillary Clinton's image has changed? It wasn't all that long ago when people were saying, oh, my heavens, she could never run for president because the Clintons are so radioactive and they're so partisan, and you just get this very wild reaction. And now we're getting this whole everybody loves Bill Clinton, and the Republicans are saying, oh, we miss him so much. And now Hillary is this sort of bipartisan mom figure out there.
We're talking with New York Times op-ed columnist Gail Collins as part of a series that we instituted a while back called How Did Politics in America Get So Weird? Another candidate in a closely watched race is Sharon Angle of Nevada. We've been talking about her. She's been avoiding the press lately. She shushed a local Fox News reporter, and we have a clip of his report.
This afternoon, Sharon Angle addressed a room full of general contractors during a luncheon at the Orleans. She did not answer questions immediately, but she did shush me.
Sharon, can we talk to you about why...
Well, I have to get on, but I just want to ask you to get out the vote, okay? Thank you.
Now, this is a Fox News person. Are these Sharon Angle, Carl Paladino, not aware of the fact that they that's where they should go for their support?
I think it's just, especially with Sharon Angle, absolutely automatic that anytime she sees anybody with a microphone, she runs the other way. And for good reason, even her non-public appearances, whenever anybody turns out to have a tape recorder, turn out to be huge disasters. That's why when we got the one about how the Latino students look Asian to her and the one about how Dearborn, Michigan is under Sharia law, all those things happened in events that she had attempted to keep the press out of. So and she hired a decoy, I think, in one of her events to try to drag the press in the other direction so she could run out the door. She's it'll be fascinating if she wins.
Well, Harry Reid hasn't been very visible in his campaign. Maybe he needs to hire a body double just to get a little more visibility.
Well, you know, that's why that is the worst campaign, really the worst race, because both the candidates are so disliked that they never come out. I mean, I've never seen a campaign where both people never came out to see the press ever.
This election season, we've seen a tremendous amount of private money spent by candidates. As of the end of September, Linda McMahon had loaned her own campaign $41.5 million. She'd spent about $39 million at that point. Is this one of the most expensive Senate campaigns ever?
Yeah, you know, there's between Linda McMahon, well, there's some people in particular, Linda McMahon in Connecticut, Meg Whitman in California, and Rick Scott, who's running for governor as a Republican in Florida. Those three who finance their own campaigns, among them will have spent about $250 million when this is over. And it's possible all three will lose, which is just fascinating to me.
Well, the money still, maybe they're trying to help the economy.
Jobs,
because
jobs, that's what it is.
Well, but in the end, are they spending so much money because their campaigns are not working well for them?
No, I think they're spending the money because they can, but it's not working for them.
Both President Obama and Bill Clinton are scheduled to be in Connecticut to campaign for candidates this weekend. We have to assume that their support is welcome. But what happened in Rhode Island with the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Frank Caprio?
Wow. You know, it was an interesting situation in that he's running against Lincoln Chafee, who's sort of a Republican but an independent and, you know, it's one very, very liberal guy for where he's at.
And he supported Barack Obama during the
campaign. He supported Barack Obama very early on. So Obama didn't take a position and didn't endorse anybody. And I think that might have gone vaguely unnoticed, unfortunately, he then made the speech about how Obama could take his endorsement and shove it, which, you know, didn't make me feel this is the classiest candidate we've ever seen in the history of the world. And I've gotten a lot of letters from people saying, how can you say Nevada has the worst races? Look at us in Rhode Island now. So we'll see.
Now, what about your book, When Everything Changed? I keep on saying it's coming out in a paperback edition later this month. Well, it is later this month. When is it coming out?
It's out. It's here.
Oh.
You got it.
Little Brown.
Yes, absolutely.
And meanwhile, we have your column twice a week, except when it says that you're taking the day off.
I'm here.
You're going to be here, and we're going to be speaking to you on Election Day.
On Election Day, yeah. Look forward to it.
I can't wait, because I'm sure a lot of stuff is going to happen over the next week.
You can count on it.
Gail Collins, the op-ed columnist for The New York Times. Our weekly contributor to our series, How Did Politics in America Get So Weird?